to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the third and final hour of tonight's stellar installment of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, joined in studio by Winston Smith as we broadcast live from our flagship, AM 1380 WLRM in Memphis, Tennessee, going out over the internet at libertynewsradio.com and thepoliticalcesspool.org. The Liberty News Radio Network is, of course, our provider to all of the AM/FM affiliate stations out there across the country, and of course we're on satellite as well. You can catch us on the Liberty News line. Just, man, so many ways to catch your favorite political talk radio program now, and we're thankful you're tuned in no matter how that may be. Winston, as you know, we've had a lot of fun tonight with Merlin Miller and Craig Boddicker, not to mention Keith Alexander, who was co-hosting with me during the first hour, as we really gave folks the true legacy of Ted Kennedy. But now it just keeps on keeping on as we bring back to the Political Cesspool microphones another man of great intellect and a man who has produced results, as our previous guests have, Dr. Greg Johnson, editor of the Occidental Quarterly, calling in tonight from one of my favorite homes away from home, Atlanta. Dr. Johnson, how's it going?
Fine. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you loud and clear.
Great, great. Well, it's a pleasure to be on tonight. Thanks, James, for having me on again.
Well, it's always my pleasure to be sure. And Winston, I know as a man as well-read as you are and as intellectual as you are, having a man of Greg Johnson's caliber is always a treat.
Certainly is. Greg, it was my Dr. Johnson, I should say, it was my pleasure to meet you when you came to Memphis. And it's one of the most memorable nights of my life. It was my pleasure to talk to you about literature. We both enjoy Herman Melville. And it was good to see somebody who could talk with me about one of the finest American authors ever.
Well, I enjoyed meeting you too. And one of the things that I decided to do after we had our talk is to put online some of D.H. Lawrence's essays on Melville, because I think those are really quite brilliant.
Oh yes, that's a classic. Everybody who's interested in literature should read that.
Yeah, well, I when I talked to James, I said tonight that I'd like to do something to promote the Occidental Quarterly's new website, which is called TOQ Online. The URL is www.toqonline, it's just all one word, .com. And I find that some people have to add the a forward slash after the com because of their web browsers to get us. But anyway, we have been online now since April 17th. And we have been putting up one or two things that are worth reading every day. And we're slowly building a readership. And the reason why we wanted to do this was we have a lot of really talented writers in our network, and a lot of them wanted to comment on more topical things without the long time delays of a quarterly publication. So I want to commend that to all the listeners out there. There is another voice for our people, and that is TOQ Online, which is updated daily.
So expanding the scope, in other words, of the Occidental Quarterly, obviously there's only so much room you can put into the journal each quarter, and you've got a lot more talent and a lot more contributors than can be fit into each edition. So expanding it onto the web, taking advantage of the new media with TOQ Online. Greg, before we talk more about that, let's go back and remind everyone exactly what the Occidental Quarterly is. In my opinion, and I'm sure it's opinion shared by many, it is the premier journal of Western thought available to our people out there, but I'm sure you can be much more specific.
Well, the Occidental Quarterly was founded in 2000, and one of the founders of it was the late Sam Francis. And we are in our ninth volume now, and we have published a lot of first-rate thinkers, including people like Sam Francis and Kevin MacDonald is another writer who has been featured in our pages a lot. Other TOQ writers that you've had on your show include Roger Devlin and Virginia Abernathy. And the goal of the journal was basically as follows. TOQ was designed to be a scholarly publication with high intellectual standards that would, first of all, discuss race and the reality of race in a, you know, a sensible, measured, sane, realistic, and but fearless fashion, and not intimidated by any kind of politically correct egalitarian dogmas. And second, TOQ was to distinguish itself from race realist publications by also dealing in the same kind of rational way with what's generally called the Jewish question. And so we have been publishing now again for 9 years, and we have, I think, we started out with very high standards, and I think the journal just keeps getting better and better and keeps attracting more contributors. So that's what we're here for.
Winston, what more could you say about the Occidental Quarterly? And I think Greg said it damn well.
Certainly did, just as he did when he came to Memphis. And I see the goal of the Occidental Quarterly is to correct bad ideas, to expose bad ideas, and to replace them with good ideas. Greg, Dr. Johnson, I remember you talking about that brilliant woman who paid with her life because she accepted bad ideas. And now we're all suffering for it because she was a brilliant woman and she accepted the feminist position that she didn't need to have children and pass on her brilliant genes. But that's what the Occidental Quarterly does, people. It exposes bad ideas and gives you good ideas.
Yes, the story, as a background, there was a doctor here in Atlanta who was murdered earlier this year. And when I read the news story, I thought this is just a concrete example of why it's important to have journals of ideas that analyze the reigning ideas of our society that conspire together to lead this woman to a bad end. And I talked about that in my last appearance. But anyway, the left has long understood the importance of investing in the intellectual sphere, and the results speak for themselves. Wherever you turn in the mainstream media, in the mainstream publishing houses, in the universities, their message is constantly being reinforced, even though, for the most part, if you look around the world, if you read the news with a critical eye, it's quite obvious that these ideas do not work and that they're disastrous. Specifically, the idea that the races are equal, that the sexes are interchangeable, and that the natural, normal, ethnic preferences that people have for their own kind, their own families, their own extended families, those are illegitimate for white people. That idea is one of the things that we're really trying to combat. And we feel that unless we combat these things on the moral level and the intellectual level, that we are going to perish as a people. Because right now we live in a multicultural society where every group except the majority, which is fast shrinking and will no longer be the majority in 33 years, according to the latest estimates. Every group but us, white people, the majority, is encouraged to look out for their own, get their piece of the action. But whites are told that it would be immoral for them to be concerned with the long-term interests of their group. And that is a recipe for disaster. So we would like to stave off that day when we become the minority, and we want to make sure that our people are willing to take their own sides in ethnic arguments. And that's really what politics in the world today boils down to, although white people tend to be blinded to that.
Well, my goodness, what a very eloquent commentary there, Dr. Johnson. And this is the role that the Occidental Quarterly and obviously TOQ Online plays for our people, giving you very well-educated and well-reasoned intellectual arguments on the issues that face our people, both contemporary and otherwise. And we'll talk more about it. In fact, much more to come tonight, as we're going to be talking about an article that was published most recently with the TOQ and TOQ Online. It's a review of Quentin Tarantino's latest movie, Inglourious Basterds. It was written by Trevor Lynch, and you got to hear Greg Johnson's take on it. We're going to get to that right after this. We'll be back in just a moment.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool Guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be
misunderstood. Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Continuing on tonight with Dr. Greg Johnson, editor of the Occidental Quarterly. You can link over to the Occidental Quarterly by going to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Greg has been talking about TOQ Online, and we're going to be sure that he has an opportunity to plug that again before we run out of time. But we promised you going into the commercial break that we would talk about Inglourious Basterds, and we're going to, but not before Winston has the opportunity to ask another question of Greg.
Well, James, I know let's spend the bulk of the interview on the review of Inglourious Basterds. And if we have time, I would like to pose a question to Dr. Johnson. But I'm interested to hear what he has to say about this piece of garbage movie.
Well, Dr. Johnson, what can you say? Or should I say, what did Trevor Lynch say that we can repeat on the air tonight?
Well, I'm sure pretty much everyone has seen advertisements or previews of this movie. Quentin Tarantino, who hails from Tennessee, I believe.
That's right, Chattanooga.
He's a director I've followed for some time myself, and I have a love-hate relationship with his movies, increasingly a hate relationship with them. But anyway, his latest movie, Inglourious Basterds, is a World War II fantasy. And basically what it's about is it's Quentin Tarantino's fantasy about how he would have liked the war to have turned out. And the main plot elements are this. It's about a group of terrorists, basically, people led by a fellow from Tennessee who claims to be part American Indian, just like Quentin Tarantino does. This guy is a kind of fantasy stand-in for Quentin Tarantino. He's played by Brad Pitt. His name is Aldo Raine. Anyway, Aldo Raine leads a group of Jewish Americans, and what they do is they go into occupied France and Germany, and they go around terrorizing Germans. They're all referred to as Nazis, right? Whether they're actual Nazis or not, anybody who's a German or wearing a German uniform is a Nazi. And the purpose of these people is to terrorize them by killing them and mutilating their bodies and torturing them and doing horrible things. So anyway, it sounds it sounds pretty ghastly, and the climax of the movie is where these terrorists, these bastards as they're called, machine gun Hitler and Goebbels and all these leading Nazis at a movie premiere, and then the building burns down and blows up, and that's the end of the war as Quentin Tarantino would have liked to have seen it. And of course that didn't really happen, but the movie reviewer that we have, Trevor Lynch, has been on the racialist scene since 2001 or 2002, writing movie reviews. We lured him out of retirement once TOQ Online went online, and it's my opinion that we really need to engage popular culture to bring a racialist and Jew-wise analysis to popular culture, because most people don't read books anymore. Most people watch TV and get information off the internet. Popular culture provides people with the images and the stories that they take to sleep at night, even, and that populate their unconscious. So this is something that we need to do. And once we published this review, which came out last Tuesday, I've been following the web statistics very closely. And up until that point, we had about 12,000 unique visitors to the website in the month of August. Not a lot, but we're getting going, and it's been increasing steadily since the beginning. Since Tuesday, we've had 11,000 people come and read the review of Inglourious Basterds. So it's almost doubled. Yeah, the number of readers in a month over the whole previous month. And I'm sure we'll probably have a couple thousand more before this month is over in a couple days. But that is an indication of just how important it is for us to analyze popular culture. And one of the things that we can do by analyzing popular culture is this. We can teach people how to decode it. We can teach people how to see the political agendas that are encoded in popular culture, a political agenda that is, I think, designed to promote the destruction of our culture and our race, our physical race, by promoting things like miscegenation, childlessness, and things like that. Any kind of life and race-destroying lifestyle that is being promoted is generally being promoted and sold to white people. Okay, and if we can teach white people to see through that, then we have, in a stroke, destroyed the power of Hollywood. Hollywood has billions or hundreds of billions of dollars in capital invested in, you know, in studios, in theaters, in actors' salaries, in publicists. They have vast amounts of money invested in churning out this race-destroying propaganda. If we can show people how to read this and make them immune to that propaganda, then we have instantly negated their investment. And suddenly, whenever people turn on the television, whenever they see an advertisement, and they see the agenda being pushed in those things, all of a sudden, Hollywood's, you know, and by the American media industry, which I'll just call Hollywood, right, their vast capital investment is suddenly reinforcing our message rather than their intended message. That, I think, is the best leveraged kind of cultural guerrilla warfare that we can engage in. And that's why I'm convinced that this is the right kind of thing to do. So anyway, I'm hoping to get a number of writers who are racialist in their orientation working away on the critique of popular culture. I think that's the most valuable thing that we can do, and that's the direction I'm going to take the website in.
And that's something we talked about on Friday, Greg, as we were discussing things we would present to the audience in tonight's broadcast, speaking of Inglourious Basterds, and you went on to say that it is very important to criticize pop culture rather than completely disengaging from pop culture and building a fortress around ourselves and our families, and basically letting it go on unabated. We need to infuse ourselves into the mix there, let our voices be heard. We need to parody it. We need to skewer it. We need to apply ourselves, and certainly that's what Trevor Lynch has done. With the help of the Occidental Quarterly, and it's reaching a lot of people who would not have been reached, and perhaps people who never would have been brought into the fold of TOQ had it not been for the vehicle of pop culture.
Exactly. And one thing that made me realize, I knew this for a long time, but I need reminders constantly. But one thing that reminded me after I got the website going is that it's all well and good to publish the kind of stuff that I'm interested in, which is articles on Oswald Spengler and people like that, but that's not going to bring people to the website. That's not going to change the world. It's important, but it just doesn't have the purchase on people's imagination that movies and television have. And that's why our enemies have invested heavily in it, as well as a more rarefied academic world of book publishing and journals and things like that. But the thing that really reminded me that I had to get people working on movie and television stuff is I looked at the web statistics for the month of July, and it was a respectable month. We had we were up a bit from the previous month and up about 50% from the month over that, so things were going along well. I looked at all the breakdown of all the articles, and I found that more than one-third of the people who visited the website came to read a single article. It was an article by Michael Bell on a role-playing video game called The Elder Scrolls.
Greg,
and that really humbled me.
So. Sit tight on that thought. We'll pick up right there when the cesspool continues right after these words from our sponsors.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out
of this place. Welcome back to the show as we head down the home stretch here tonight on AM 1380 WLRM Radio and going out to our affiliates, courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network. I am James Edwards, joined by my co-host Winston Smith as we interview Dr. Greg Johnson of the Occidental Quarterly. We've covered a lot of ground so far, talked about the mission of the Occidental Quarterly and what they bring to the table. We've talked about the Occidental Quarterly online, their web presence there, and Trevor Lynch's most recent review of the film Inglourious Basterds. And then, Winston, we were talking about the importance of the criticism of pop culture and how we can critically discuss and engage in it. What's your opinion on that, Winston?
I think we should engage it. I think we have the not just the responsibility, but the duty to severely critique it, just as they have critiqued our culture and thereby established themselves as the dominant culture. There is nothing wrong with critiquing them, just as they critique us, and we should do it. Dr. Johnson said something earlier that kind of intrigued me. excuse me. He said that one of the things we should be doing is exposing what Hollywood's movies are doing. We show Americans how to decode the messages that are in them and see that the message in these movies is to destroy white people. But you know, Prime Minister Disraeli famously said, and Dr. Johnson, I'd like to ask you this, Prime Minister Disraeli famously said that race is everything, and every race innately understands the reality of this, what Disraeli said, every race, that is, except the white race. Do our people really not understand that race is everything, or do we understand and choose en masse to ignore it and repress it? Because I think most Americans do know what's going on, but they either feel too apathetic or too dominated to do anything about it.
This is a very important issue, and it's something that I think about all the time. One of the most important things written on racial consciousness, white racial consciousness, that I've ever seen was, I'm proud to say, it was published in the Occidental Quarterly. It was published before I was the editor. It's by Kevin MacDonald, and it's about the whole concept of implicit whiteness. And MacDonald, what MacDonald does in that piece, it's reprinted, by the way, in his book, which is called Cultural Insurrections, and that's available through Amazon.com and through TOQ Online's bookshop. But in this piece about implicit whiteness, what he argues is this. He looks at a lot of psychology, that psychological research that's been done arguing that white people who claim to be anti-racist actually have implicitly racist attitudes. And when I first heard about this research years ago, I thought, oh, this is just more politically correct nonsense out there, just trying to browbeat white people and make them feel guilty. Well, it turns out that the race that the literature on this and the experimental data on this is actually really quite well done and powerful. It is true that white people who claim to be anti-racist or non-racist, or even white people who claim that they love other races more than their own, when you actually test their attitudes, their implicit attitudes about race, you find that they have a tendency to prefer their own kind. So what's going on here? And what McDonald argues is that there are really two levels of processing in the mind. There's explicit processing and implicit processing. By an explicit, really what we're talking about is the conscious mind, what we think, or what we think consciously about ourselves and about the world. And the conscious level of the mind is influenced by things like our educations, by the media, and so forth. And we have been barraged for many decades now by increasingly intense anti-white and anti-white racial thinking propaganda. And therefore, in the explicit consciousness of a lot of well-meaning, quote-unquote, right-thinking white people, they think that it's wrong for them to have any kind of preferences for their own kind or any kind of suspicion or hesitation about dealing with people of other races. The trouble is that the way that the brain is wired is that there's a very deep levels of the brain that we share with other animals where it's hardwired for us to have a preference for our own kind and suspicion for different kinds of people. And therefore, there's a conflict here. And Disraeli's point is really correct. Race is a very, very powerful factor, and I would say more than just race. I would say genetic similarity, even amongst people of the same race, is very important. And let me just give you one example. I was adopted as a baby, and I, you know, grew up in a family that were very similar in their ethnic background to my birth parents' family. I mean, we were very similar. They were very similar, you know, English and Scottish primarily. And yet, when I met my biological mother as an adult, I experienced an instant rapport with her that I had not experienced with my adoptive parents. Even though we were very close and I love them very much and we were of very similar genetic backgrounds, I shared so much more genetically with my mother, and I had not experienced that growing up. And so when I first encountered that, that was an amazing experience to me. It was a shocking experience. And I think what happens is a lot of white people just grow up in a society where their whiteness can be taken for granted, and they're not aware of what the importance of genetic relatedness in producing a feeling of being at home with people, being able to understand people, having a kind of rapport, having a feelings of trust, and so forth. So what's happened is we have been brainwashed in our culture to suppress our racial feelings and replace them with anti-racial slogans, which is what the whole politically correct propaganda sphere is trying to reinforce. But deep down inside, nature still has a voice. It's a voice that's often silenced, but it's still there. And so you find that even people who are very, very liberal in their views about race tend to live in neighborhoods where they're surrounded by people of the same race. So this is what's going on. Part of the project of the Occidental Quarterly, both the print journal and now the TOQ online publication, is to help people get in touch with their suppressed, unconscious racial feeling. And when I first heard Kevin McDonald speak about this, I felt enormously hopeful because I realized that although the enemy has for now won the battle for people's conscious minds, they have not been able to change people's genetics. They haven't been able to change the deep wiring of the brain, nor can they. And this is why there is such a ferocious energy on the part of our enemies to constantly reinforce these false messages, because they know that the moment the propaganda lapses, people are going to people's biological instincts will reassert themselves, and therefore there can never be a space in our culture that is free from their propaganda. When I go visit my mother, she doesn't watch a lot of TV, and what she does watch tends to be things like the Animal Planet channel and House and Garden TV. Well, you can't even watch shows about animals or about house renovations without having a bit of multi-culti, multi-racial propaganda being shoved in there. It is literally everywhere, and it has to be everywhere, because if there's a single space in our society where that does not exist, our rulers, the establishment, are afraid that nature will take its course and that they will be dethroned. So that's an enormously hopeful thing in my book. Nature is on our side, and once we gain sufficient traction in the cultural realm, we can begin being ourselves again.
Well, Winston, I can't say enough for the preparedness of Dr. Greg Johnson tonight. I mean, he has come into this interview with both barrels fully loaded, and what a riveting interview it's been thus far, and it's certainly to no credit of our own. He has just really brought it all to the table, and there's a little bit more we want to cover with Dr. Johnson before we run out of time. One more segment to go. TOQ is offering a couple of contests, and we want to learn more about that essay contest, and we will as soon as the political cesspool concludes right after these words.
We gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me.
If I didn't tell her, I didn't. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Dr. Johnson, I really appreciate what you've brought to the program tonight and the great information that you've brought to the attention of our audience, and certainly all the details about the Occidental Quarterly for those who perhaps have never heard of it before, if they're tuning into the program for the first time tonight. And with each broadcast, there are inevitably those who are doing just that. So we like to make the round, so to speak, with the most prominent figures in our political circles and showcase them and their fine organizations. And when you're talking of fine organizations, you just don't get much finer than the Occidental Quarterly. But, Greg, we only have about 10 minutes left, and I certainly want to have enough time to cover the essay competitions that TOQ is sponsoring. What can you tell us about that?
Okay, well, thanks for mentioning that, James. One thing that we want to do with the Occidental Quarterly is to encourage the best minds who are on our side to think about specific topics. And the first topic that I thought we should really work on is the topic of secession. There's a lot of discussion both within racialist circles and in politics in general about the idea that maybe it would be better to downsize America, to break up the nation's big nation states and empires. And we've seen this with the fall of the Soviet Union and the fall of Yugoslavia, where you had multi-ethnic and multiracial empires divided up into more ethnically homogenous societies. And writers like Wilmot Robertson have floated the idea that the United States should be subdivided into ethnically homogenous states. I think it's a really interesting topic. So I offered a prize of $1,000 to write an essay exploring some aspect of a secession from a racial nationalist perspective, and the prize essay of that was published the 1st of August. It was a piece by Michael O'Meara, and that has garnered a good deal of discussion on the internet, and we're going to publish the winter issue for 2009-2010. It's going to contain it and a bunch of other essays on that topic by other writers. So anyway, One of the things I'd like TOQ to become is a kind of virtual think tank, a network of people scattered around the globe, connected together by common interests and a common goal, and working from their different perspectives and background on common problems of really questions having to do with white survival. The question that Winston raised, you know, what's wrong with the white man? You know, how have we gone so wrong? That is another question that we will definitely have an essay competition about, because there's a lot more to be said about to explain the fall of the decline and fall of a race that 100 years ago controlled basically the entire globe. We have undergone the most dramatic reversal of fortunes, from controlling virtually the whole world except for places like Haiti, Ethiopia, Liberia, and a few places in the nether regions of Asia. You know, the white race is now being threatened with dispossession in our homelands, including Europe itself, where we are the indigenous people. So that's an extraordinary reversal, and the best minds need to work on that, because that's something that needs to be explained too.
Well, many of those best minds can be found writing for the Occidental Quarterly. I know the ears of all of those in my audience perked up when you mentioned a $1,000 prize. Unfortunately, the window has closed on that competition, but you do have a new one forthcoming regarding libertarianism and nationalism.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I decided to use that topic, interestingly enough, had to do with a phone call that I received when I was on your show the first time, the first and only time before this. it was from a fellow who was coming out of a libertarian background, and I know a lot of people who are racial nationalists today who, when they were in their 20s or so, or especially when they were undergraduates in college, the first set of ideas that they really were attracted to was some kind of libertarian free market philosophy. And on the surface, there are no more opposed sets of political philosophies than libertarian individualism on the one hand and white nationalism on the other, which is a form of racial collectivism. It's a form of racial communitarianism. And the question, in my mind is, by what strange alchemy have all these libertarian individualists turned into racial collectivists? And so that's one topic. That's the next topic of our contest, or one version of the topic. The topic is very general, just libertarianism and racial nationalism. We're also hoping to get racial nationalist critiques of libertarian individualism. But it'd be very interesting to have some writers explore just how they made this strange intellectual odyssey. So anyway, that's a topic that I think will generate a lot of really interesting discussion. So I'm looking forward to that.
Always piques my interest. I'm always interested to find out how each of us got to where we are, the journey, the breadcrumb trail, what led us to this final destination or this ever-evolving destination that we find ourselves currently at. It's interesting, interesting topic, Greg. So if someone out there is listening and they'd like to participate, how could they do just that?
Well, go to www.toqonline.com. And remember to stick that /in there if your browser can't figure out what that means after the com. And there's a link near the top of the page on the essay contest, and it has all the details on there. So, and if there are any questions that aren't answered on that page, just contact me by email, again, through the website, and I'll explain anything. The TOQ is also doing a special issue next year on Francis Parker Yockey, who is the author of Imperium. He's certainly one of the few American racial nationalists who is the past, who's a remarkable writer. And next year, on June 17th, is the 50th anniversary of his mysterious death in a jail in San Francisco. And so it was suggested by Michael O'Meara, actually, one of our leading writers, that we do a special issue on Yockey's legacy, and that is shaping up really nicely too. So we've got a lot of really intellectually exciting special issues and essay competitions and other things slated for the print journal. And the direction, again, that I really want to focus the online journal on is more and more topical criticism of the mass media. And just to go back to that topic again, I do not blame parents especially for simply wanting to unplug from the mass media and just not be involved in it at all. I don't have cable, and I haven't had it. I've never paid for cable, actually, in my entire life. I have a strong instinct for being detached from that. I don't see the necessity or the utility or the sanity of paying large amounts of money to have enemy propaganda pumped into my house. I'd no sooner do that than pay them to pump sewage into my house. And yet, we cannot completely isolate ourselves from this, especially our kids. If they go out and hang around at the mall or go to school, they're being exposed to it anyway. And so we've got to teach them how to read this stuff critically, and we have to teach ourselves to do that if we're going to teach the kids. And beyond that, it strikes me as an enormous opportunity for us to take all the propaganda that bombards us, and by showing people how to decode it, turn that into propaganda for white nationalism. Because every time I look at the TV now, if I'm traveling, if I'm visiting friends, if I'm in an airport, every time I see a commercial, I see further evidence that white nationalism is correct, that there is an overwhelming conspiracy to promote multiracialism and other race-destroying ideologies in the mass media. And there is no refuge from that. And yet the very fact that it's so omnipresent actually reinforces our message as soon as people learn how to decode it. So that's one of the projects for the online journal.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for spending an hour with us this evening, bringing us up to date on all of the good work of the Occidental Quarterly and, of course, the Occidental Quarterly Online. We can't thank you enough for the service you provide and the role you play in our ever-growing movement. Greg Johnson, everyone. Greg, give out that website one more time.
Yeah, it's www.toq for the Occidental Quarterly, toqonline.com. And James, I can't believe an hour has flown by. It's been a lot of fun, and I definitely would love to be back in the future, and I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you so much.
We thank you.
Thank you, Winston, too.
And you have our word, you will be back. That's all we have for the show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, check us out at thepoliticalcesspool.org and take advantage of our fundraising opportunity before it expires on the 31st of this month. For Dr. Greg Johnson and the rest of the cast and crew here in Memphis, I'm James Edwards. Good night, everybody. We love you.
Go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.